And also thank everyone for joining this call. So just, I'll just leave this up for a quick moment. And if you guys are ever have a passion to want to read this, this is actually located right off of our Social Impact Special Interest Group page, wiki page. Right by the side, there's the antitrust policy notice and code of conduct right on the side. So before we, if we could, do you mind if we could quickly go through a round of introductions, just so that we can capture everyone who's on the call? I think I see a couple of new names. Maybe we can start with Paul. Actually, do you mind starting?
No, not at all. Hey, everybody. This is Paul Lamb. I'm a nonprofit management consultant based in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Paul, thank you so much. And Paul will also be presenting about crypto philanthropy at towards the middle of this call. I also see, hi, Bobby. Do you mind?
Hi, this is Bobby Mascara. I'm the chair of the Learning Materials Working Group. So I, you know, sit in on a lot of the special interest calls to help with documentation, but I love the special interest group, Social Impact, because I, you know, I've been involved with the group for over a year, and I took a lot of the things we learned, and we created a nonprofit organization this summer based on social impact and the stuff we've picked up from this group. So it's a great group to belong to, and I get a lot out of it. So thank you for hosting.
Bobby, thank you so much. That's great to hear. I think I also see Bipin.
Yeah.
Hi, Bipin.
How are you?
Good. Do you mind quickly just introducing yourself to the group?
Bipin Bharathan. I do digital transformation consulting, and I've been a long-term member of Hyperledger. I run two groups in Hyperledger. One is the Identity Working Group, and the other is the Capital Markets SIG. Both have obviously relationships with, I mean, a relationship with trade finance SIG. And I'm glad to be part of this group.
Hi, Vivian. If you're trying to call into the trade finance group, they're actually using a different Zoom line. It should be available in the chat. But you're more than welcome to stay in.
They were supposed to do the backup, no?
No, so they're actually moving on to the main Zoom line.
Oh.
Yeah, there was a bit of a traffic congestion.
Well, sorry, you guys are...
We're the Social Impact Special Interest Group.
Okay, so what I would ask from you is that Andres Bonifacio had come and presented the Identity Working Group about you.
Mm-hmm.
I would ask for us to collaborate more on the Identity Working Group.
Absolutely. So, we would love that.
All right. So I'm going to move off to that one because I think I would be more useful there. I don't know, but you know, that was the meeting I wanted to attend. So.
All right. Sure.
And I'd ask Will to change the meeting in his main wiki page, mm-hmm. which is still pointed to backup.
Gotcha. Sounds great. So, Jim, would you mind quickly also?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. This is Jim Couples, and I work on the project All the Farms, which is a farm database where we also mirror that data in Hyperledger Sawtooth. And I'm happily the vice chair of this group as well.
So actually, Jim, so just to continue that, with the last call, when we actually announced to the group that you would be the vice chair, unfortunately, you weren't able to make that call. Would you mind just speaking a few words about you know, what you intend to do with the vice chair position? You know, just kind of quickly, you know, introduce yourself a little bit more in that role.
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing that I like to do is actually to work on projects, especially in a university environment. So I have two blockchain projects right now going on with Oregon State University using Sawtooth. So in essence, I'd like to get more use cases out there in the world. And I'm happy to help in any way I can with others on that.
Great, thank you. Leila, I also see that you're on the call.
Yeah, sorry, I had issue getting off mute. So my name is Leila Yosef. I'm a research manager focusing on blockchain with Accenture, and also plugged into a variety of social impact, social innovation initiatives across the company as well.
Excellent, thank you, Leila. Also, Mark.
Yeah, I'm Mark Liberati, policy specialist with the UN Volunteers. I was previously as part of our digital transformation in the working group on blockchain, AI, and big data, and I stay abreast on the special interest of social impact SIG, mostly just, you know, see what are emerging some use cases that then could be incorporated potentially into my work. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I also see Matt.
Yeah, Matt Rosen here with TraceRx. We're a supply chain company focusing on the humanitarian logistics, and everything similarly is mirrored onto Hyperledger Sawtooth.
Thank you, Matt. Welcome. And I also see Sean.
How's it going, everybody? Sean Wilborn. I'm a law student here in the Miami area at the University of Miami. I'm interested in the intersection of IoT, blockchain, and machine learning, specifically with the waste and water industries.
Thanks, Sean. Dre, are you also on the line? Dre? I think you're still on mute.
Yeah, sorry. I was actually, I just texted you. Yeah, I'm online. I was having some audio issues. So you probably noticed I was logging on and off there. Yeah. Now, I'm excited to be part of this group again. And so I'm not quite sure where you are in this meeting because I was logging off. And I assume you're just going through introductions right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm Dre Bonifacio. I'm located in St. Louis, Missouri, and our company is helping to forward some of the social development goals, the sustainable development goals, as well as address some areas of financial and economic inclusion as it relates to the SDGs, as well as social determinants of health. So... Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dre. Would you be interested in helping me with some of the meeting notes?
Oh, sure.
You're logged on also.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So thank you, everyone, for joining the call today.
Hey, I'm just going to
jump
in real quick. My name's Alpin. I'm new to this call. And I work with Mercy Corps on our blockchain related initiatives. I think previously Rick Shreves has been the person who's participated on these calls. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to join the call today. I assume people know about Mercy Corps, but just a quick nutshell, we do work in about 40 different countries on humanitarian around humanitarian programming, as well as international development aid. We're involved with the Libra Association as a founding member. We're also involved with several other partnerships that leverage blockchain and cryptocurrency. and are trying to find the kinds of tools that will help broaden the impact that we want, especially with regard to financial inclusion. But we also work more broadly on other social factors, and happy to be a part of this call.
Alpin, thank you so much for joining. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your projects.
Sure, thanks.
So just to quickly jump into the meeting agenda, one thing I don't know if the community has seen was that Stanford actually released a 2019 Blockchain for Social Impact report. And I believe that their first report was released in 2018. Just quickly with like a call out, has anyone seen this already?
Yeah.
You've seen this, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that one of the main authors is from RippleWorks, the CEO of RippleWorks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just met with him a couple of weeks ago. He was talking about, I know. So he shared a lot of this at a presentation.
Oh, excellent. Is there any chance we could probably get him on the call?
Probably not. I mean, it would probably be hard to get him in particular. It might be possible to get the technology person that works at RippleWorks with him. Let's see here. Yeah, I mean, it would be a little bit harder to get Doug, I imagine.
Yeah, if possible.
But there's a guy named Rick, I think, who I could ask.
That would be great.
Okay.
Has anyone else read this?
I have not read it, but it's on my reading list for the next week or two. But it was,
yeah. I haven't either.
Yeah, so I left the link to it on the meeting agenda, just in case anyone wanted to read through this. I think a couple of things are really interesting in terms of the primary use cases for blockchain. Anyone else read this? I just want to make sure I'm not missing anyone. Just in terms of the primary use case for blockchain, that, you know, the records and verification were some of the most hot, popular options, as well as the types of blockchains that were used, and the different types of value adds, and kind of segueing this into some of the projects that we would like to do as a SIG. I do believe that in some of the survey results, there was interest in developing new types of use cases. And I would love to kind of get you guys' opinion in terms of marking where the current state of social impact is for blockchain. If you guys have any thoughts, we're starting to write essentially an outline for the different, let me quickly show that. An outline for the different use cases as well as the different sectors within this, the social impact, and trying to figure out which companies are, you know, where they are in relation to the space. So is there any interest from you guys on kind of pursuing this project further?
Hey, it's Bobby. I do have to say the use cases in the social impact calls mm-hmm. are probably the most interesting, and making them available in an indexable way to people, whether we want to take all of the use cases we hear and run them through a standard template so that when you go to the social impact page, all the use cases look and feel the same, or mm-hmm. if we just want to do something where we store the use cases and then, you know, maybe develop some ideas on pulling out best practices or governance or whatever we want to pull from those practices. But, I'm not sure which way you want to either just index it or if you want to rewrite all the use cases we hear.
Bobby, I think you raise a really good point on many fronts. One in particular is we can standardize how we are documenting the different types of use cases. But furthermore, I think, and I would love to get everyone else's opinion on this, is that it would be impactful to have these use cases and then also drive kind of more forward-looking into how we can scope different types of technologies based off of the requirements for social impact. For example, being able to drive best practices, different types of standardization. Bobby, what do you think?
Yes, I think that if we do that, then we can basically, if we have them in a standardized form, we can draw better conclusions off of them, you know, depending on what the use cases lend themselves to.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, would you mind taking the lead on driving the templates and as well as obviously the effort beyond that?
It's funny you asked that question. the Learning Materials Working Group if you go to the working groups page, you'll see the Learning Materials Working Group. And we have templates under best practices for use cases for white papers. So basically what you would have to do is just copy the template, read the use case, and very generally, almost in an abstract format, you know, summarize each use case. And I could get like a wiki page started for the group and put the template up there so that if anybody wants to grab a use case and kind of throw it through that template and put it up, I can definitely do that.
That would be great, Bobby. I knew I was asking the right person. Any other thoughts from the group? You know, Layla, I know you're working on many different types of use cases. Would love to kind of get your opinion on how we can do some of these things, as well as Mark, Jim, Dre. I don't want to just call anyone out, but if anyone else also has any thoughts on this, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah, and just so I understand, the objective is to sort of capture what kind of use cases align to the various sectors that we have documented here, mm-hmm. to either identify gaps or help to inform, you know, future white paper development or other sort of solutions and, you know, collaborative efforts.
Exactly.
Goal. Okay. I think it's a good idea and a good starting point, just to help. Because I mean, I know there's like working groups for white papers, and I think this sort of will help to kind of, it'll be like a foundational step, I think, to help drive some of the other sort of working groups that are part of this social impact SIG. Mm-hmm. And I think there also may also, from my understanding, I think there may have been other organizations who have started to scan sort of use cases in the social impact space. So I think we'll just want to take note of what's already been happening in the marketplace, so we're not recreating the wheel for some of these sectors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even sorry.
No, yeah. I think this is a good start and good initiative to help get the ball rolling on sort of other, you know, outcomes that we hope to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think also to your point, one of the conversations we had over the SIGs were, how do we make sure that we're not doing duplicate efforts with some of the other ones? So we'll have to, exactly to your point, Layla, make sure that we're not trying to recreate something that's already out there, but finding out the gaps and filling those in. Awesome. So I guess one of the action items for the group would be, you know, take a look and start thinking about this, you know, the how you guys, you know, would like to, you know, drive some of these efforts going forward, and also you know, be on the lookout for this outline. I'll also send it out into the meeting emails that I send for the recap meetings. And just, you know, feel free to jot down any types of ideas that you guys have or any thoughts or even any type of materials that we could use to kind of inform some of these future efforts.
And will people kind of sign up for each one, or how will?
Yes. Yeah. So you raise a great point. One of the things we would love to have is probably for each of the sector, if anyone's particularly interested, to sign up that they would lead that effort for that sector. And that way, you know, we can have, you know, a couple points of contact for each of the sectors, like agriculture and land rights, for example, you know, having someone lead that. Just to drive some of those efforts. And we'll use, you know, the working learning group, my apologies, Bobby, and use their template to kind of standardize the effort across the board. Any other questions? Any concerns? Great. So the other thing I just want to quickly raise is an open call for community presentations, and we have some openings in December for these. I know you guys had mentioned in the survey that was done over the summer that you guys were interested in fabric, indie, and sawtooth, and so a little bit more technical with some of the interest for future presentations. So Bobby very kindly had introduced asked Chris to present on fabric. What is the interest level for indie and sawtooth, and does anyone have any potential contacts that would be willing to present on these topics to us? My apologies. Anyone?
I mean, I'd be really interested in indie, especially since digital identity is probably going to be one of the areas of focus from a use case perspective. Mm-hmm. I can try to see if there are any folks within Accenture who can speak to it. I know they're really busy, but I can reach out.
That would be great. Thank you, Leila.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay. And if you guys have any thoughts on some of the other ones, please let me know. And if any of you, like within the community, are also interested in presenting or giving an update on your projects, that'd also be great to have you guys present too. So the sign up for that, just in case you guys aren't aware, if you click here on this link, you'll get to go to the community presentation page. Where you can just kind of put your name down next to any of the open slots that are available for presentations. And I know that the community usually loves it when we have these, so thank you guys. So moving forward to the community updates, I believe last weekend there was the San Francisco Blockchain Week. Mark, were you able to attend the event?
Hi, yes, I had remotely participated as a coach with one of the teams. It was randomly selected, so we provided some, the participant gave his proposal. We refined it a bit with him, looking at the sustainability of it, asked a few tough questions and worked through it with him. I don't know if I should be sharing it because it was sort of their ideation. So, but anyway, it was just a 3-hour consultation that we provided. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was worthwhile. I would love to have been there in person, but that wasn't possible. So it was the best second option.
Hi, Mark. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Glad that you were able to attend the event, and hopefully it was a lot of fun too. Also, one of the things to highlight quickly was the Hyperledger Global Forum that's happening in March, and I'm going to probably be reviewing this every call going forward until this moment. Just quickly, I'm out of curiosity, have any of you guys made plans to go? Are you guys going?
I do you know when we might hear about the talks being accepted, Nancy? To me, that's the pivotal thing.
November 14th, if I remember correctly, that was when we should hear back.
Oh, did you
Hi,
say November?
Hi, it's Bobby. The reviewing process is ending on October 31st, and then I think it is a 2-week review, and then it should be done by the middle of November.
Awesome.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, just from Mercy Corps, I believe at least one, if not Rick and I, both were planning to come.
Great.
I will be there.
Awesome.
I'll be there too.
Excellent. So one thing I do want to throw out is that if we do all end up going to the Hyperledger Global Forum, it would be great to schedule some type of meetup just would love to meet everyone face-to-face and in person. So one quick other thing is, are there any other events that you guys are going to be attending that are coming up? Or ones that you're not attending but could potentially be of interest to the community, feel free to add those to the list. I don't want to cut into Paul's presentation too much, but are there any other topic items you guys want to discuss before we move forward?
I think there's a Dreamforce meeting that some folks may be attending, or the Dreamforce conference or event. I think it's in San Francisco in November. So I think there might be some blockchain related items with respect to what Salesforce is doing in the marketplace. I know it's not blockchain specific conference, obviously, but I know there's some folks from the Accenture community who are attending, and I imagine there'd be a lot of representation from a lot of different organizations.
And Layla, do you know what the dates are for that?
Yeah, it's November, I think 19th through the 22nd.
Okay. Thank you, awesome. Anything else for the, anyone else want to raise any comments or anything? Thank you guys so much. So Paul, Paul had introduced himself quickly in the beginning, but without further ado, I'm gonna hand it off to you. So do you want me to drive or do you want me to give you the host?
Yeah, it's probably easier if I drive, Nancy.
Okay, sure. I will.
I'm not a great driver, but I'll see what I can do here.
No worries.
All right.
See if you can share your screen.
All right. Did you just want to make sure I got this?
I will pause my share and see if you can get your sharing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not seeing it here. Let me just try something.
So try next to the manage participant. Yep, there you go. I think you're.
Oh, there we go. Right. Okay. Just pull my screen up here real quick. Okay, good deal. Hey, everybody. Again, this is Paul Lamb with Man on a Mission Consulting. I'm a nonprofit management consultant based in the San Francisco Bay Area. And incidentally, we're having some challenges related to fires and power outages. So if I disappear suddenly, please don't take it personally. It's maybe due to a power outage. My work is primarily around tech for social good. And in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been focusing a lot on blockchain and cryptocurrency in the social sector, with a particular focus on crypto philanthropy, which is obviously what we're going to be talking about today. I also sit on the board of the BitGive Foundation, which is one of the early pioneers in Bitcoin giving and Bitcoin donations, and advise an organization called ManaBase, which is leveraging cryptocurrency for universal basic income. So, Nancy, what do we have, about 20 minutes or so?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll try and keep this relatively high level. Basically just wanted to provide a kind of an overview of the landscape currently in terms of crypto philanthropy, and drill down to talk about some of the activities and use cases before we hopefully have plenty of time to open it up for Q&A and discussion. So, if I can get to the next slide. Sorry, my computer's running a little bit slow this morning. There we go. Okay, so at a high level, the way I define crypto philanthropy is, as it says on the screen, the use of cryptocurrency or distributed ledger technology to enhance philanthropic giving systems and impact. And I think a lot of the focus in this space has been on donations. But for me personally, it's much broader, and it's not just about making donations via Bitcoin, et cetera, but looking at new ecosystems and ways of conducting philanthropy and systems as opposed to just donations. It's for those of you who have been following this at all, there's some activity and excitement around this, primarily in 2017, when a lot of donations were being made and Bitcoin was popular. More popular in the public eye, and some of the major players, including the National Philanthropic Trust and others, were seeing this as a huge opportunity. And as it says here, the quote from Eileen Heisman, the CEO of the National Philanthropic Trust, that the light has gone on. And I would argue that light has dimmed a little bit since the crash, but it's still there. And I'm just... Before I was just curious, is there anyone on this call who's actually made a donation via cryptocurrency? Doesn't sound like it.
I have.
And who's that? I'm sorry.
It's Bobby. I belong to the Kiva organization.
Uh huh.
So I set up so they. Microfinancing donation was in crypto.
Awesome. Awesome. And did you find it fairly easy to do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love cryptocurrencies.
Right.
I would prefer to pay in crypto all the time.
Excellent. Yeah, it's interesting when I give talks or presentations, I always like to kind of gauge the sort of state of the industry, if you will, by how many people are actually involved in philanthropy or giving through crypto. And to date, there usually aren't a lot of folks, even in the crypto savvy crowd. So nice to see, Bobby, that you're actively making donations via crypto.
Yes, so, and the Kiva and the microfinancing is exposing so many people to loans that never were before. It's just a great organization.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good organization. And they've just rolled out a blockchain platform too, as you probably know. So they're very active in the space. So just quickly to touch on some of the benefits of crypto philanthropy, leveraging DLT, blockchain technology, the best components or the advantages of these technologies. Giving is generally more transparent on blockchain, meaning we can follow when donations were made, the amount, and who received them. Donations and aid, which is has not been the case in most of the donation flows and aid flows in the past. Obviously, that relies on a public blockchain. Payments, donations, et cetera, are obviously more decentralized and global. They can happen anywhere at any time, which is a unique feature of blockchain in the giving space. Transaction costs are lower depending on the cryptocurrency and when donations and money flows occur. And then there are certain tax incentives for givers using cryptocurrency. In the United States, for example, there are no capital gains taxes charged on cryptocurrency donations if they're made in the cryptocurrency as opposed to converted to cash. And then while there's not a lot of activity right now in terms of operations, meaning leveraging smart contracts and other blockchain-based tools, I think we're going to see more operational efficiencies come out of blockchain, things like automated grant systems and smart contracting of grant systems, et cetera, in the future. So TBD. Some of the trends that we're seeing in terms of crypto philanthropy, I think since the market crash, there's been overall a decrease in donations made to NGOs and nonprofits via cryptocurrency. And there's no good research that's been done on this that I'm aware of. It's mostly anecdotal. But one example is Fidelity Charitable, which is the largest donor-advised fund in the United States, has been accepting crypto donations for the last 3 years. In 2017, they took in about $69 million worth of cryptocurrency donations. And in 2018, last year, I think it was only $37 million. So that's kind of an indicator of how much money is flowing in terms of donations from cryptocurrency. At the same time, though, we've seen an increase in the number of NGOs that are actually accepting cryptocurrency for donations. According to a recent report from the NGO Global Technology, or the so-called NGO Global Technology Report, as many as, or up to 2% of NGOs globally are now accepting cryptocurrency. And although that's not a lot, it was apparently 1% the year before. So it in terms of who's accepting cryptocurrency, those numbers are going up. In accordance with, I think, what's happened in the larger crypto market, in other words, the crashing and burning of a lot of different projects and programs, similarly, I think we've seen a lot of the exciting projects or early entrants into the market disappear once the bottom fell out of the crypto market. About a year and a half ago, I did some research and identified between 40 and 50 different projects in the crypto philanthropy space, mostly charity coins, et cetera. And I would say about 10, maybe 20% tops are still active, actively working on projects and providing crypto philanthropy tools and resources. So there's definitely been a shakeout in the market. That said, there are some of the larger players in the space, meaning Ripple, Coinbase, or Brian Anderson of Coinbase, Binance, a few of the others are very active with large programs, some of which I'll talk about in a minute. And then there continues to be a lot of innovation happening in the space, and I'll provide some examples in a minute as well on what I mean by that. So just to kind of frame things, from where I sit, the kind of spectrum, if you will, around crypto philanthropy, from the more mature to the less mature, obviously we're all pretty familiar with the notion of making, you know, donations through Bitcoin. There are some crowdfunding platforms that are now available. Charity coins, which are coins specifically designed for or used by NGOs, nonprofits, social sector organizations, and then even mining for charity. These are things which are more familiar or on the more mature side when it comes to the space. And then we're starting to see some management platforms, things like donation tracking, and measuring impact through transparency, through transparent donations and tracking of donations online. And then on the less mature side, there are some efforts around developing kind of self-governing organizations or self-governing philanthropies that live in the cloud and are based on the movement of tokens and the development of tokenized economies around giving. And I'll come back to that in a minute too, but that's kind of in the far out end of the spectrum in terms of what's, you know, what's really happening and what's likely to happen in the near term. So talking more specifically on the left side of the spectrum, the more mature area, of course, direct donations is the most active area in the space. In 2017, 2018, 200 million, probably more than 200 million was donated in the US via cryptocurrency. And as I said earlier, now 2% of NGOs globally are accepting cryptocurrency through donations. And it doesn't get as much attention as it probably should, but I think China is really leading the space when it comes to blockchain-based platforms for donations. And you can see down on the left-hand corner of the screen, Qing Songqiu is a blockchain-based platform that allows for individual givers to support healthcare of low-income individuals throughout China. And I think so far they've donations in aggregate are now well over $3 billion and supported over 1.5 million families and individuals who can't pay their bills, their healthcare bills, et cetera. So it's a massive amount of money that's flowing in the charity world in China via this blockchain-based system. There are others that are emerging as well. Just to put that in perspective, that $3 billion that has been donated to low-income individuals to cover healthcare expenses. In the United States, the fifth largest healthcare provider, which is Kaiser Permanente, they have spent less than $3 billion in terms of coverage and care. Specialized coverage and care support for low-income individuals, and that also includes money they spend on training and research, etc. So if you look at it in perspective, that $3 billion is pretty significant. Folks have probably heard previously of the Pineapple Fund. There was a lot of publicity around the Pineapple Fund in 2017, 2018. Roughly $55 million was donated by an anonymous donor or donors going by the name of Pine. And that money has all been distributed. And then Ripple has a program called Ripple for Good, under which they've committed over $100 million in support of education programs and other programs through Ripple. So let's move on. Let me just take a pause here to see if anyone has questions or thoughts. Definitely want to leverage the collective brain power here. Any comments from anyone? All right, we'll keep going.
I mean, I was just unmuting myself. This is Mark. I was just curious on the funds allocated in crypto, then were the did all spending have to then be managed in crypto, or was then it was just converted to fiat and then reported back to those organizations?
You're referencing the Pineapple Fund?
Yeah, Pineapple Fund caught my attention because you said all the funds were allocated. And I was just curious, like, I mean, were those just in general, like, standard grantees that one would see from any foundation? Were these specific crypto projects? Did the funds have to be then all spent sort of like an ERP system, like, in crypto? Or was it just quickly converted to an account and there was some donor reporting back to the Pineapple Fund
when they achieve the outcomes that they had promised.
Right, got it. Yeah, most of the recipients of the donations for the Pineapple Fund were standard nonprofit organizations. They weren't crypto projects or crypto programs. And generally, I think most organizations converted their Bitcoin donations immediately into fiat and treated them as cash donations. And that's typically, I think, what happens when NGOs or nonprofits receive crypto. There's an immediate conversion into cash for, you know, obvious reasons. Any other comments, questions? All right. Just want to talk briefly about institutional giving. What I mean by that is foundations and other institutions in the giving space that are now engaging in crypto philanthropy in one way, shape, or form. The Silicon Valley Community Foundation is a good example. They're, I think, about the 12th largest foundation in the U.S. And back in 2016, 2017, they received a number of sizable donations in cryptocurrency, mostly Ripple, to the tune of about $3 billion plus. And since the crash, that the value has gone down significantly, probably at least half of what it was originally worth. But they are making donations via crypto to various grantees of the foundation. Fidelity Charitable, I already mentioned, is active in the space, allowing donors through their donor advised funds to make donations via a range of different cryptocurrencies, which are then typically converted right into cash and donated to the organization or the recipient organizations. And then Binance, which we know is one of the major crypto exchanges, they have a Binance charity fund and have committed over $100 million to support various projects. They have a crowdfunding program. If you go to Binance Charity Fund, you'll see, I think they've raised about $3 million to support a variety of their own programs and other programs primarily in Africa. So another sort of subsector of crypto philanthropy is charity coins and even some mining. Charity coins, again, are coins that have been developed to support nonprofit projects and or NGOs, or even developed by nonprofits, NGOs themselves. And one good example of that is Aidcoin, which raised, as you can see here, over $1 million in their ICO going back a few years. They are affiliated with a nonprofit called Charity Stars, which basically does auctions of meetings with famous stars to generate money to support charities. And they develop their own blockchain-based platform and coin or token to support that, and are positioning themselves to provide that platform for any charity that wants to accept donations through cryptocurrency. And they even use a stable coin as part of their donation scheme. The Root Project was another effort that launched a couple of years ago, gaining over 400,000 through their ICO. They developed a crowdfunding platform that would allow folks to support various poverty alleviation efforts. And they had an interesting scheme where they would provide, they would put aside a certain percentage of their coin called Root Token to provide a pension fund for people who were employed in these various poverty alleviation projects that money was raised to support. Unfortunately, they are a victim of the market shakeout and are no longer in operation. That's one example of project that's sadly has disappeared, even though it was a leader in the crypto philanthropy space. The last one I'll mention here on the mining side is Kudo Donate, which allows folks to download a tool where they can be mining in the background, and a percentage of what is mined through Kudo, their platform is donated to various nonprofits that they select. Crypto crowdfunding, which is also fairly popular in this space. There are a number of platforms, BitHope, BitGive, BitGive Foundation, and GiveTrack. There have been a number of nonprofit projects. I thought this one, not a nonprofit project, but an interesting example of crowdfunding. I think most of us know Ross Ulbricht, from Silk Road. A number of folks developed crowdfunding programs to support his legal expenses. And I don't know how much was ultimately raised, but as you can see here, at a minimum, he got a Bitcoin in legal expense support. So next up, just wanted to touch on some of the donation tracking and impact measurement work that's being done in the crypto philanthropy space. Full disclosure, again, I'm on the board of the BitGive Foundation, which supports this GiveTrack initiative and tool, which allows folks to track donations to a particular project, usually a crowdfunded project, to track in real time the donations, where they're going, and how the money is being used all the way through to project completion. And this move towards transparency, transparent giving is very popular now in the philanthropic sector in general. And again, blockchain and various blockchain platforms are trying to take advantage of that trend and provide systems and platforms that are allowing for more transparent giving. The last category, going back to the spectrum of the most mature to least mature, on the least mature end, is this notion of distributed philanthropy. Is anyone familiar with the organization called Giveth, which is listed here on the screen? Anybody know about them? Okay. Well, Giveth has an interesting platform that they have developed, which allows technologists to self-organize, to develop tools leveraging their technology and other technologies for social causes and for giving. And what makes it unique is the fact that they can sort of self-organize and leverage their own platform and technologies to do giving, as opposed to going through an existing institution or an existing organization. Kind of a unique approach, and I think we're going to be seeing more of that moving forward. On a related note, Brock Pierce. Folks, who's Brock Pierce? I know folks on the call know who he is. Come on, anybody know Brock Pierce?
From Sensa?
Yeah, yep. So, And can you say anything more about him, Bobby?
He was a child actor that took his monies he made from that and invested heavily in Bitcoin, and mm-hmm. is the head of the EOS, which is a blockchain based on authority, I think.
Yep, exactly. And that's a picture of him here. And I'm not sure which one he is, but in the Mighty Ducks, as you said, he was a child actor, best known for his appearance in the Mighty Ducks and Mighty Ducks 2, has gone on to be a kind of a crypto guru. And he, in the crypto philanthropy space, he has said, although I don't believe it's happened yet, that he wants to donate approximately $1 billion towards philanthropy, but in a kind of a unique way. And what he's proposing is to create a system which allows for crypto holders to swarm, in a sense, or vote with their crypto feet to support various programs and projects, or even create their own programs and projects that are supported through the movement of tokens to a particular initiative. So again, it's this notion of distributed philanthropy and allowing projects and support to flow as needed or as crypto holders determine is where support is needed. So some of the opportunities in the crypto philanthropy space, obviously, there are new funding streams that are available that weren't available previously. If we look at the Pineapple Fund, for example, that $55 million that was donated back in 2017, 2018, that was new money, right? This is a person or persons that made a lot of money on the crypto markets and decided very generously to make those sizable donations. This is not money that's already existing in the philanthropic space for the most part. And assuming the market, the crypto market continues to improve, I think we're gonna see more and more of this. Also along with that, you know, some interesting kind of fundraising approaches are emerging. One, of course, is ICOs, which I'm not sure is going to continue, but it has, I think, at a minimum, given folks in the philanthropic sector ideas about how various programs can be funded as opposed to how they've traditionally been funded. Things like Libra, if it does actually happen, will present new ways to give or move money. Donations, et cetera, in ways that I don't think have been fully developed or fully available. And just to give you an example, currently, if you make a donation on Facebook, it takes about 2 weeks to process. In other words, from the time you make the donation, it'll take 2 weeks before the recipient actually gets that money. With cryptocurrency like Libra, you know, it can happen almost instantaneously. So there are some efficiencies from new approaches that could really help the space or add value to the space. As you know, I touched on briefly this notion of more transparent giving and the ability to track impact in real time, and maybe even streamline operations through automated granting systems, et cetera. Will create some really interesting opportunities moving forward. And then we're seeing, you know, some ongoing innovations. A couple weeks ago, you probably heard of the announcement that UNICEF is launching their own crypto fund, where they will be making donations in cryptocurrencies or investments in cryptocurrencies, not in cash, to support various projects, youth projects, et cetera. The Brave browser, which if you aren't familiar with, is one of the newer browsers that is supported through a token, basic attention token, is now offering advertising grants to nonprofits to get those nonprofits in front of Brave browser users, similar to the Google Ad Grants program for nonprofits. And then I think, you know, moving forward, and this is just really in the idea stages, the notion of a distributed autonomous foundation, if you will, kind of similar to what I mentioned around Brock Pierce and his thinking, moving away from institutional giving to sort of swarm-based giving and flows of donations and support around institutions like foundations or aid agencies, et cetera. I think there's some opportunities there, again, to think about ways to make giving and philanthropy more efficient less expensive.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
We're a little bit over time by about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Is it okay? So I think Matt had asked a quick question in the group chat, and I want to just make sure that we circle this question out. Are NGOs receiving crypto and then converting them into fiat, or are they cycling the donated crypto into subsequent crypto-based activities?
And what was the last part of that? I didn't hear that.
Are NGOs receiving crypto and then mm-hmm. converting them into fiat, or are they cycling the donated crypto into subsequent crypto-based activities?
Yeah, for the most part, most recipients of crypto donations are converting them immediately to cash and not holding on to the crypto. It does happen, but I think for the most part, it's really automatic conversions. And the largest platform provider, BitPay, which has a specific nonprofit donation program and tool, that's what they do, is they take, you know, Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies and immediately convert it into fiat, and the organizations receive cash and treat it as a cash donation as opposed to a Bitcoin donation or a crypto donation.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul. Unfortunately, we're a little bit over time. If it's possible, Paul, we could probably bring you back at a later date to have you kind of give us more of an update on the different opportunities and challenges.
You bet. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Sorry I went over.
No worries. Thank you guys, everyone, so much for joining the call today. And Paul, thank you so much for giving us a wonderful presentation on crypto philanthropy. I think it was very insightful for everyone. And we will continue this next week. And Paul, hope to have you back. And for everyone else, hope you guys had some fun, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Nancy. Take care, folks.
Bye, everyone.